Hey everyone, it's Dan Favalli. Remember to search Blue Wire Buckets in iTunes or Spotify for more NBA content.
Hello, everyone. Thanks once again for listening to another episode of the Hardwood Knox podcast. I am Dan Favalli, coming at you once more without my co-host, Andrew D. Bailey. I am, however, excited today to be joined by Mo Dekeel. He is a former video coordinator for the Los Angeles Clippers and San Antonio Spurs, currently a freelance contributor for the Washington Post, and he is also with our parent podcast company, Blue Wire Podcast. Follow them at Blue Wire Pods. You can find Mo talking on Blue Wire Buckets across all these other podcasts on our network. He's also getting his own podcast, which has yet to be named, so be on the lookout for that. If you're not following him on Twitter, I would strongly recommend it. He has great insights and analysis, X's and O's breakdowns on there. He is at Mo Dekeel _MBA. That's at MODAKHIL _MBA. If you want to follow me, I'm at Dan Favalli. Andy can be found at Andrew D. Bailey. The show is at Hardwood Knox. And once more, we would just like to remind you to continue rating, reviewing, and subscribing to us on iTunes. We can also be found wherever else you consume your podcasts: Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, Spotify, all those good places. But iTunes is still the best way to let us know that you're out there, that we are not just rambling, yelling, screaming, delivering these crummy basketball takes into the void. Take the 10 to 15 seconds out of your day, search Hardwood Knox on iTunes, throw us that 5-star rating, write a review, subscribe if you have not done so already. If you've already done all those things, please, we appreciate referrals, shout-outs on Twitter, anything to help us continue building up our brand and getting the word out. With all of that said and out of the way, we will now be speaking with Mo Dekeel. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Hardwood Knox podcast. I am Dan Favalli, coming at you once more without my co-host, Andrew D. Bailey. I am, however, super excited to be joined by Mo Dekeel, who is a former NBA video coordinator for the Clippers and the Spurs, and he's a freelance contributor to the Washington Post, and he's also a member of the Blue Wire Buckets podcast network. He has been all over the place there, including now on this podcast. You can catch him on Blue Wire Buckets, and he will have his own podcast, which will to be named later. That's the podcast that we're calling it at the moment.
For now, yes. I almost feel like I'm a man wandering the streets and just jumping into different podcasts whenever there's an opportunity.
I have no doubt it'll be worth the wait. But now there's a lot of pressure on the name now, because I feel like it's been promoted as this to be determined name. It's like now the podcast name just has to be an A1 winner.
Well, I don't know. I kind of just think to be determined might be the best podcast name.
It's like the new Cash Considerations, which is also right. The Wire Buckets podcast.
Right, you know. Unfortunately, it's not baseball. Otherwise, it'd be like, you know, a podcast to be named later.
Yeah, I mean, that works a lot, too. I think in the NFL, is there a lot of that, maybe? I have no idea. There's not enough of that in the NBA. Maybe it'll start popping out, like, over near the draft, where it's like draft pick to be named later or something like that.
I'm always curious how that works, but like I want that guy now. I don't know enough about it to figure that out, but it just seems like we're gonna take Ricky today.
that's spectacular. I have pestered Mo to come on though and go deep on the Clippers with me today. If you're not following Mo on Twitter, I would highly suggest doing that by now. Remedy it immediately. He can be found at Mo Dekeel _MBA. That's at MODAKHIL _MBA. He's a fantastic follow, great analysis, X's and O's stuff, insight into the teams. Again, follow him at Mo Dekeel _MBA. Before we get started though, how are you doing today, Mo?
I'm doing well. A little cloudy. We had a little bit of rain in LA. I know people really love it when I complain about LA weather, but we're not used to that here in sunny LA. Weather's been pretty crappy the past week.
Look, I just want to admit that I harbor infinite resentment towards everyone in Mountain and Pacific time zones whenever there are NBA games on. So I just need to clear my chest and get that out there right now.
Oh no, I don't know how you guys do it. I was in New York at one point 2 years ago, and I think like the Warriors Rockets game went to like double overtime, and I was just like, dude, I can't do this. I gotta go to sleep. So I understand your struggles, and I'm not gonna apologize though.
I wouldn't either. I covered the playoffs from Mountain Times when I was in Denver once, and it was bliss. It was like all the games were over. I was like, yo, it's only like 10 o'clock. What's going on?
Right. Tonight's game starts at 6. I'm going to go watch it with a buddy. We'll be done by 9. And, night's still young in LA.
Oh, yeah. Again, there's that resentment of mine cropping up once more. I am here to – I did bring you on here to talk about the Clippers. And with them, it's tough to answer big picture questions about a team really before an offseason plays out. For them, it seems especially tough because everything is just contingent upon how free agency – plays out for them. More than or about half their team is entering the open market. They have a clear path to easily over $50 million in cap space. They can get a second max slot if they move some of their salary. So since it starts, everything starts with free agency for them. Do you think, and I guess it seems like a dumb time to ask this question with the Lakers' coaching search at peak hopelessness right now, but are the Clippers officially that more attractive destination than the Lakers? Are they the it team in LA now?
I wouldn't go far to call them the it team. Like, LA's always going to be a Laker town. Like, there's no, listen, the history here, the attachment, everything from Showtime Lakers to the movie stars that show up to games. It's always going to be an LA crowd. And if you were in LA during any of the Laker playoff runs where they were looked like going to be championship contenders, you know what I'm talking about. All the cars had flags, Laker flags everywhere. You couldn't get away from it. So it's, and it's not a shot of the Clippers. This will never be fully a Clipper town. Mm-hmm. As soon as the Lakers start to have any sort of success, everybody will come running back. So it's, that's the situation there. Now, in terms of for free agents, yeah, this is definitely, the Clippers are definitely the more attractive destination right now. On many levels, they made the playoffs. They have a well-respected coach. They have a front office that actually has a plan and has some sort of idea of what their goals are. And you know what you feel like with them? You feel like they have contingencies on top of contingencies. You don't feel like they're going to be caught off guard. They've done a phenomenal job. And you have to give credit to Lawrence Frank, Eric Winger, Trent Redden, and their entire staff. And then on top of all that, Steve Ballmer has been a phenomenal NBA owner. Look, he came into the league. He put Doc as president, which wasn't a great choice. It wasn't a great decision. And he remedied that fairly quickly in terms of an NBA team timeline. I think it was, 2 or 3 years later, Doc's just coaching. He's kind of fixed all that. He's pouring money into the organization. People forget it, but the guy's worth like $40 billion. Like, his value doubles from when he bought the team and has nothing to do with the team at all with Microsoft. So he can pour all his money into it. He's trying to build a new arena. He's trying to get out of Staples Center and get out of the Lakers' shadow. Like, there's a lot of amazing things that the Clippers have going for them that if you're a free agent, you're looking at that going like, stable organization. They gave the Warriors a tough run through 6 games. They, they traded their best player in Tobias Harris and still were able to make the playoffs in a very difficult conference. Like, there's just too many positives about this organization that, if you're any free agent, not even just players, coaching opportunities, chances to go work for that team. They're going to look at that team before they look at the Lakers right now. We saw it with Winger and Redden passing up on opportunities to stay with the Clippers. So I think that's the difference between the two. In terms of fans, it's always going to be a Laker town, but in terms of free agents right now and things, I think they're the most attractive of the bunch.
That was actually a point that I was going to make before you did too. It's like, if you're Winger and Redden and you had the chance for more prominent gigs and you withdrew your names and I'm just on the outside looking in as a player, I'm like, wow, that's a pretty big flex by the Clippers that they're, assistant front office executives or their general manager, Michael Winger, doesn't want to leave.
Yeah, I mean, and these aren't like lateral moves. These are opportunities to move up and run your own organization. You know, this is a big thing. You know, it's if this was the mafia, it's a chance to run your own family. You know what I mean? Probably not the smartest analogy I could have made, but I went with it. So, you know, I think those are huge, huge things. There's obviously something building here. And you know what, having gone to many games and seen it firsthand, like, it's getting there. Like, you can feel kind of the good energy about it. This is every staff member I've spoken to who was there when I was with the Clippers and still there now have all said the same thing. This is by far my favorite team. This is the team I love to be around. Like, you know, the other teams we had high expectations and had a higher ceiling, but this is my favorite team to be around. And that says a lot, man. You can't beat that.
No, for sure. Their free agency plans, though, it's been just well reported about how they've scouted so much of Kawhi Leonard and Kevin Durant. Is this for them? And I know, I think there was recently reports that said they've been scouting Klay Thompson, which I don't think is a big deal on its own. But when you look at all these rumors, just their cap situation, they're in this interesting spot because, you know, if they do, is this like, if they do get Kawhi and then maybe another star, if they even get just Kawhi, it's not, I don't want to say easy, but that's your direction and you know how to flesh out your roster from there. But when they're looking at these stars, and if they don't get Kawhi and or KD, are they a team that you see maybe pivoting to the more riskier max contract options like Kyrie or Jimmy Butler, or are they a team that then immediately pivots into plan B, whether that's, you know, salary cap flexibility or actually trying to build around this core long term? And I find this question personally fascinating just because you would think with a lot of teams, I would say some of the poorly managed teams, shout out to the New York Knicks, you immediately steer into these other names. But the Clippers, you know, moved Tobias Harris for a good return, but he was just considered this nice backup plan from the outside. And so the fact that they moved him, it makes me wonder if they don't get their, what I think we can call their two primary targets, where do you think they're going to go from there?
Yeah, so I think they're in a good situation. I don't think they're like, look, I'm sorry, I'm going to bring in the Lakers a lot because it's comparison, but you know, the Lakers have to get somebody, right? Like, that's been the big thing. Like, they have to get a second star for LeBron. The Clippers don't, you know, if say they strike out, they can easily run it back with this crew. And guess what? Next year, Gallinari's number comes off the books and they'll still have a ton of space and they could be players in that realm, that free agency. It also opens up the opportunity to make a big trade and take a disgruntled star maybe to open things up and take that money that way. I don't expect this organization to really panic. I think the moves they made, if you look at it, were all smart moves. Tobias Harris, for example, you know, it had to have been hard to trade him, but you know, their calculation is, hey, we're going big game hunting this free agency. We're trying to get, you know, two of Kawhi, Klay, or Kevin Durant. We know there's going to be a high demand for Tobias Harris. He might not be able to wait for us to figure out our situation. So they flipped him and turned him into assets. And I mean, Shamit, you know, Wilson Chandler, who didn't play much for them this year, but is a guy whose number comes off the books. They got the two first rounders out of this one, including Miami's coveted 2021 unprotected first round pick. So that's that's an amazing job. So I just don't think this is the type of group that will panic if they don't get those guys. You know, if they don't get their guys, cool, they'll just pivot to their next, you know, their next contingency plan. You know, so I think they're in a good place to land at least one of them, possibly two. But I think, you know, the way they're set up, I would be shocked if they tied themselves to, and we've seen how great Jimmy Butler has been, but tie themselves to a long-term deal with Jimmy Butler or Chase Kemba Walker or even Chase Kyrie. I just can't see them doing that.
Is it smarter for them to go the placeholder route in that, I don't want to call it a worst case scenario because they don't technically have these players, but in that scenario, is it smarter for them to go the placeholder route, or do you look at the 2020 free agency class and you're sort of like, Or so then in which case would they, you know, you have, I know Williams contract non-guaranteed the season after next, Harrell and Gallo, as you say, come off the books next season. Do you look at maybe actually trying to build around that team in that scenario where it's, you're not necessarily throwing these 4 and 5 year big money deals at players, but you're handing out multi-year packs to where you lock yourselves into the core for a little bit? Or again, do you think that just going the placeholder route and trying to remain lean into 2020 would be the smarter play for them?
I think they'll try to remain lean. I think that's kind of the smart thing to do, because it also opens up not necessarily just free agency, that stuff, but, you know, also opens up opportunities for trades. Right. And, you know, also Anthony Davis is going to be a free agent next summer, most likely. I don't think he'll sign an extension wherever he gets traded. I think he'll wait, and then I think it behooves him to wait to become a free agent and then sign a deal. So I think, you know, having the powder dry and ready to go for that, you know, they certainly can. I think, you know, I think we were going to talk about it at some point, but I think, you know, they should look at bringing back a Patrick Beverley. He was a big part of what they did, heart and soul wise. And I think those are, you know, there's that kind of stuff. I think there'll be some guys they'll be willing to extend, some they won't. But I just think knowing the organization and the way they do things, I mean, look at the Lou Williams deal. I mean, how team friendly of a deal is that? You know, it's a flat $8 million across, it was across 4 years, the last year not guaranteed. You know, they put themselves in a really good position. You know, it's a movable contract if they need to move it. I mean, they just make smart decisions, man.
Do you see them as a team that might enter the Davis sweepstakes if they don't have another star on the way? Or do you think that it's going to take one for them to be motivated to give up what it would cost to land Davis? And I guess, you know, order of operations here matters as well, because we're assuming that the Pelicans will even let this ride out into the start of free agency, when there's probably a chance that they could do it before the draft or on draft night or just something like that, in which case the Clippers almost have to make that decision before free agency ever starts.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of order of operations, I could see New Orleans agreeing to a deal that wouldn't be finalized until July 1st. So, I mean, agreeing to a deal before the draft and then July 1st, it finally becoming official. I can see them, they have to explore. They have to look into a guy like AD. If AD is available, that's somebody you can make happen. You got to explore it. I don't know if they have enough. You know, I think any deal is going to be centered around Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, whose name I can barely say. Landry Shamet, I think it's going to require probably moving a guy like Gallinari, because to make the money match, it's going to require draft picks. So the Miami pick, their draft pick, I think all that's got to go. I just don't know if that's a good an offer as they can get. I think they'll get better offers from other teams, so I don't know if they're in that running. But if you're the Clippers, you have to look at that, and you have to be willing to give up those assets, because it's going to cost you something to get him. And you can't sit there and think, okay, well, I don't want to give up Shamet, or I don't want to give up Shea. I'm like, you guys don't have that choice. And we run into it across every trade, right? There's every fan base that's like, they become too attached to these young guys. And they're in love with the idea of what they might be, instead of looking at somebody that can help them right now. And I think that's something the organization will have to figure out, really where they're at in that regard. But I think, you know, you have a guy like AD in the fold, and if you're able to keep the cap space, you're going to be able to go after a guy like Kawhi still. And that's got to make you more valuable in the free agency run. I think that's why I won't be surprised to see a AD deal done before July 1st, so that teams can say, we have AD, you know. And I think that matters. And also another thing, which we'll find out about in the next week, is how the draft lottery shakes out. I mean, would you rather have Landry Shamet and Shea or the number one pick?
I think I'd rather have the number one pick, but if you ask me about the number two or number three pick, I might say I'd rather have Shamet and, you know, Shea.
Yeah, I mean, if it's the number one pick, I would make the move. Two or three, then we're getting into what else is available. So, it's going to be it's hard, because this is just such a crazy offseason, right? There's so many different possible scenarios that could play out. But they're one of those teams that just, they feel like in good positions, and I feel like it's weird, and this is probably terrible podcasting, but they can be involved in anything they want to be just because how flexible they are.
It will. I don't think that's a dumb pot. That's not bad podcasting form at all, because that's what's intriguing about them, because their response to what could be failure, and it does seem it's a little bit, I would say less than Kevin Durant to New York, but the Kawhi to Clippers noise feels fait accompli at this point. That said, their response to missing out on that ideal scenario would say a whole lot more about their front office. We're already praising them, but if they continue to make the smart moves in the face of knowing that they're you know, their grand prize, the reason why they were doing everything, wasn't on its way, that might be more telltale than anything we've seen thus far.
Yeah, I think they're just kind of they're just well positioned, man. It's first off, it's just jarring to see the Clipper organization so well positioned. You know, having worked there, you know, I spent 6 years in two different stints with that organization. So having kind of seen how it's, you know, it changed when I came back, but now having seen it now, it's like, wow, this is even more drastic in a positive way. So, you know, it's just a weird feeling when you look at it going like, damn, they did a good job. They're pretty set up. All right, cool. Okay. Couldn't do this when I was there. All right. Well, fine. Okay. yeah, but all right. But they're in a good situation now. So I'm just, no matter what decisions, you know what, also this front office has earned the right of everybody being patient with them.
Right. They've definitely earned the benefit of the doubt to date. The good thing about I think Davis, if we're looking at it from just a content perspective, there's a chance that the Clippers might be the best trade destination, just because they play in the same building as the Lakers right now. Everything that's going on with the Lakers, we know how much LeBron wanted AD, and to then just have him like there, but for the other team, would just be spectacular.
Yeah, and you know, it would drive Laker fans nuts. It would have it would bring back so much Chris Paul drama for them. You know, like they're gonna have PTSD Chris Paul trade stuff, that it's you know, another guy from New Orleans that was supposed to be a Laker ends up a Clipper. Is going to just I will look forward to that day on Twitter if that were to happen. But it's a good scenario. It's a good place to be. It's, again, everything we talked about. We don't even know who the Laker coach is going to be. Everything sounds like that front office is completely in shambles, and just seems like every day they're tripping over themselves. Whereas, again, the Clippers are just humming along quietly, just going about their business and making every smart decision. So it's the most stable place. It's the place where you'd want to be, I think, more. Besides the fact they have LeBron, I think this is a place that's really more interesting.
Of their incumbent free agents, and this is another thing that's tough to profile without knowing what they do on the KD Kawhi front first, do you view any of them as must keepers? I know you mentioned Beverly already. Zubac had sort of a, you know, just mini hot streak after he was traded from the Clippers. Wilson Chandler, you mentioned already. They have Jermichael Green and Garrett Temple, which that was one of the under-the-radar great trades of the season, too. Getting off Avery Bradley for two players that just fit the Clippers better, and Jermichael Green ended up playing some really big minutes for them in the playoffs against the Warriors.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. That was one of the best trades pulled off at the deadline that really flew under the radar, especially with Jermichael Green's ability to shoot. It really helped with the Montrez Lou Williams pick and roll, because like when Harold would roll, you have Green kind of lifting up, and that opens up opportunities, you know, to continue to spread the floor a bit. And if they collapsed on Harold did a good job. He had a great year, and did a good job of catching and being able to make that pass if the defense had him covered up. So I think he's really important to bring back. As I said, I think you got to bring back Patrick Beverly. It's not just his defense, but it's his leadership. It's his kind of like, he brings the toughness. Like, he's the kind of guy, I love guys like him. Like, these are the type of guys I want to coach. Just tough, gritty. They're going to get in your face, you know, and he did a great job in the locker room as a leader, which is impressive, especially as a free agent. When you look at it in the sense of, hey, you know, he knows they're going after big names. Right. You know, he might not be back. That didn't bother him at all. He just kept playing and kept trying to will this team as much as he could. And also that's something to be said about all the free agents. All those guys could have started causing trouble in the locker room a little bit of, you know, like being a bit upset with the possibility of like, you guys, we're playing our butts off, but you guys are already looking at next year kind of attitude. No, these guys were locked in and focused, and that goes to how strong the locker room leadership was, and that also goes to Doc's leadership. On that side, though, yeah, I think you got to bring back Beverly. I think, you know, if you can, you got to bring back Jermichael Green. And I know Garrett Temple didn't shoot it all that well, but I just think he's a great locker room guy. I think that's a guy I'd try to bring back if I could get him at a reasonable number. It's going to be hard. A ton of teams have space, and you know there's going to be a few teams that are just going to throw wild money out there. So you got to just hope you can hold on to these guys. But like you said, it's tough too, because you got to wait it out and see what happens with Kawhi, with KD, with Clay, you know, with those big names first before you pull the trigger on those other guys.
I think it helps them now, though, because you don't have Tobias Harris. There's not really – Beverly's probably would be their biggest flight risk, in the sense I think he drums up the most interest, but even some of the teams that are probably going to want him the most are going to be in the mix for those same names. And so there's no one left on your free agency docket that you necessarily have to wait or worry about not waiting for you.
Yeah, and I think the other side of it too is I kind of feel like Beverly wants to stick around. I have no, this is reckless speculation. Also, it might be a fun podcast name.
Well, actually, I agree. Reckless speculation. That needs to be your podcast.
I don't know if that's me. I don't know if I could pull that off. I don't tend to do that. But I wouldn't be surprised if Beverly wants to stick around. You know, he's kind of embraced LA, and to be honest, the Clipper fans have embraced him. They love him, you know, and rightfully so. He's earned it. And I think that might be this could be a good match. So I could see Beverly kind of waiting it out. But all these guys, too, are second tier guys in the free agency market, maybe even tier three. You know, they're not the guys that are going to sign deals on July 1 or 2 kind of thing. They're a little bit later. So but you're right. The Tobias Harris thing, like, he's tier one. He's going to get a contract agreement somewhere in the first 2 days of free agency, most likely.
The thing about Beverly, too, is he just fits with whatever version of the Clippers might exist or whatever. Like, he's just, we talk about plug and play guys. Very rarely are those, do they come in the backcourt, or are they guys who can then go and defend point guards, whoever they are. But with him, you know, would you want him to turn the ball over less in the pick and roll, maybe be more of a scoring threat with the ball in his hands? Sure. But the fact that he can work so well off the ball, can shoot a zillion percent on spot up threes, and then just play his ass off on the defensive end is just like, that works across all 30 teams.
And the thing is, he never plays outside of his role. Like, that's such a big thing, I think, that never gets talked about. He understands what his role is. He kind of knows who he is in the league, and he knows he's not going to be a 35-point scorer, right? He knows his job's not going to get 20 shots up in a game. You know, he knows his role, and that's such a valuable thing, at least on the coaching side of it, of having a guy that understands that really makes things a lot easier.
All right, everyone, we've got an announcement to make. Blue Wire is teaming up with Harry's to make sure our listeners are shaving comfortably. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set, which includes a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. You get all of that for just $3 shipped right to your door. Enough with the cheap razors. It's totally worth trying Harry's. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have already tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know, and they'll give you a full refund. Nothing to lose. Go try this. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for only $3.
I'm not sure who that is necessarily. But I think that's got to be considered a need, at least a starting center, almost to the point that it's like, hey, you're going to just play 20 minutes a game. We're really going to go to Harrell down the stretch and whatnot. But you need those 20 minutes to be rock solid. If you're gonna really make that leap, I like Zubac, but I don't think he's that guy. I think at best he's really a backup center, kind of a minutes eater. But I don't see him as really being that guy. And for what they hope to do and what they hope to accomplish this offseason, they're going to need a better guy at that position.
And I guess if you're hoping that guy can play even small time minutes with Harrell, you're probably looking at maybe a Brook Lopez or Dwayne Dedman might be good fits for something like that.
Right. Somebody that could stretch the floor a little bit. I know those guys are going to be hard to find because they're going to be pretty expensive. So they got to try to find somebody.
Dwayne Dedman quietly just a monster this season. I don't think people realize how well that he just shot from deep or even how sudden it really was. Like, he doesn't shoot threes for the first like half decade of his career. And then the past two seasons, he's averaged 3.3 three-point attempts per 36 minutes and then 4.9 this season. And he shot 38.2% from beyond the arc this year.
It's shocking sometimes with these big guys, right? Like when Marc Gasol started stepping out and shooting threes, you're like, wait, what? you're Brook Lopez, you're like, oh, okay. I mean, like it is a little bit kind of like, oh, wow. Okay. We're doing this now. And with these big guys, they're like, yeah, we're doing this now.
And they were like Marc Gasol threes too. Like, he wasn't in the corner. He was taking a bunch of above the break ones. So it's, again, just to see that. So, to see that happen, this was his age 29 season. So to see it start in his age 28 season, it's very disarming to see. But I love Dwayne Dedman. Just a favorite of mine now.
Yeah.
As I clear my throat, now that we can maybe actually talk about some of the actual Clippers players, do you think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is lead guard material, or do you think he's going to be forever best served in that off guard capacity?
That's the kind of thing with him. It's he really can do both. Mm-hmm. I think they're grooming him to be the lead guard, and they should. He's got a lot of talent. This kid can play. He's still got a while to go, but he's really got the skills. And I think it's good tutelage under Sam Cassell and Doc really kind of helping him work his way through it. I mean, the kid's got the frame. He's really got a lot of Sean Livingston. I don't know how many people are going to remember young Sean Livingston before his knee injury, but he's got that kind of potential. I don't know if he's as good of a passer as Livingston, but he's a lot better getting to the rim in that sense. He's still got to work on his shot. That's got to improve. But overall, I think he's got – I mean, they got a legitimate star in him. I know they really like him. Oh, I was pretty wrong about his percentage. His three-point percentage is 36.7. Yeah, I'd like it to be better, but it is pretty good, but he's got to shoot more attempts. But I think he's got a chance to be really talented. I think that's a guy that, that's the guy the fans don't want to trade for like AD, cause that's the kid they're like, he's got so much promise, and he does. There's no question about it. But at the same time, you look at it and you go, he may make it, he may not. It's hard with these guys. They're, he's 20 years old. I'm a very different human being than what I was when I was 20.
To be 20 again.
Oh gosh, I wish I could. but the whole thing of it is like there's a lot of room for growth for him. But the most important thing is it seems like he wants it, which is something you want to see in your young guys. And he's kind of slowly making his way up. He had a real rough patch during the season where he really struggled. And even, Doc didn't even play him that much for a stretch because he was struggling so much. So he worked his way through that. He had a pretty solid playoffs. I mean, he is pretty impressive. I think he's on the route of being that guy, being a lead guard. But that's still 3-4 years away.
He did look, and the percentages didn't support this, but just towards the end of the year, he did look a lot more comfortable pulling up off the dribble and just as a scorer in general out of the pick and roll. And that's, I think those would both be good harbingers of, can this guy be a lead ball handler, a lead guard? And my answer would tend to be yes now, but I was a sucker for him leading into the draft. There was always, I'm wrong all the time. There's always these players I end up caping for, and I thought that he was going to end up being really good, and I think he's still going to end up being really good. And even if you don't have from him that alpha offensive game, just all the stuff that he's going to be able to do on defense, he's so disruptive there already that he'll always have that element of his game to compensate for whatever he might be lacking on the offensive side.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it right there. Let's cut this out, and you just what you said we'll do in my voice, because that was the smart way of saying it, whereas I rambled on. But that's it with him, you know, and being able, like you said, I know the numbers didn't show it, but you're right. He got more comfortable in the pull up, you know, in that game a little bit and shooting off the dribble. And that's fine. You know, the thing is, we get locked up. So we get so deep into these guys as numbers, as rookies and sophomores, you know, that's the improvement you want to see. This is a kid that wasn't doing that at the start of the year. And by the end of the year, got comfortable enough that he can pull that off and did it pretty consistently. Says a lot.
Landry Shamet, who they picked up in the Tobias Harris trade, is there a chance that his, and I'm not saying marginally higher, but is there a chance that his ceiling is way higher than it's advertised even now? I know he receives due for his shooting off screens and just general off-ball movement, but he had some nice moments navigating the pick and roll with ball in his hands, both in Philly and in Los Angeles. He shot, this is something I didn't realize till I was doing research for this podcast, he shot better than 40% on not insignificant volume on pull-up three-pointers. And there were times with the Clippers that he was surviving defensively against small forwards. And you don't look at him and say that's a wing. He's very clearly, the terms are so blurred now, but a swingman, a guard, whatever you want to call him.
Right.
And so just all those signs, it's really making me wonder, like, is it possible that he's really, I think we could say or would have said before that his ceiling is a solid starter, very good role player. Is there a chance, though, that he ends up being something just noticeably more than that?
I mean, there's a chance. I don't necessarily believe it. I think, you know, who he is now is going to get marginally better, but I don't think he's going to get that much better. You know, they in college, he was, you know, they tried to use him more as a pick and roll guy, as a point guard more, and that just didn't really suit his game. You know, this is the right way to use him. And yeah, have him in the pick and roll from time to time is fine, but having him as your main facilitator or even secondary, I think that's where you're going to run into some problems. I think what he does now is great. And it's something that is highly valued. Shot 45% as a Clipper from three. That's huge. He hit that big shot against the Warriors in that big comeback win in game two. I think all of that stuff matters and all of that kind of leads up to him, you know, getting better. But I just don't see him getting that much better. I could be way wrong on this and we could be laughing about this 2 or 3 years from now about how dumb I was on Shamet. But I can't see him getting much further than this. You know, his stint in Philly was great for him because he got the tutelage from JJ Redick. And, you know, he's JJ Redick good right now in terms of shooting, coming off screens and things like that. So I think that's the best way to use him. I don't think his future is really kind of more than this.
And who knows if you have to be in a situation, part of it too, is probably to get the opportunity to do more. And it's not for what he's already been billed as, and just looking at what the Clippers could become or what they already are when you have Gallo and Lou Williams there and you're trying to groom Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as that primary ball handler, you're probably not going to get that same opportunity to do more stuff on the ball offensively, at least.
Yeah, I mean, and then with Lou Williams there, and I said earlier his contract, his last year of the deal is not guaranteed. I think I'm wrong. I think it is guaranteed all the way through, but still, that's just $8 million, which is going to be a discount for freaking the guy who's going to win sixth man of the year for the second year in a row. You know, but you're not going to get those opportunities just with all those guys. There's not a lot of opportunities for him to do that. So situationally, no, it's probably not going to happen just because he won't get the reps. But I also just don't think it's in his best interest to do that. Like that's not who he is. You know, you got to be who you are sometimes, and trying to be something you're not is how you end up hurting your value.
Yeah, we might have both just been off on Lou Williams. He has a partial guarantee in his final year for $1.5 million. That contract still, the 3 years, even if he, I mean, they're going to end up keeping him. He would have to have, or moving him and that team will keep, but he would have to have an abomination of a season for a team to be like, we don't want to pay this just microwave scorer who can put up 20 points in his sleep $8 million.
Right. Right. I mean, that, I mean, he's great. Like, we just got to leave it at that. Like, he can score any which way. I watch him hit the game winner against Brooklyn right in front of me. And let me tell you, Brooklyn defended that about as well as you could have. And he drills like a really tough contested three from deep, not like 30 plus feet deep, and drills it for the win. And it was just one of those things where, like, when he pulled up, I was like, oh, wow, that's not okay. You know, and that's just what he does. He just scores.
And it was, there's been a lot of stuff about how his game can't translate to the playoffs as well. And then this year, in the six games versus the Warriors, he had some huge moments, could have shot the ball better from three, but he had no problem getting to the free throw line, shot a solid 45.3% on two-pointers, averaged almost eight assists. That was just, yeah, I don't think you want him to be your best player, obviously, but the fact that he was just able to do that as the featured offensive hub against the Warriors is really, and we're not talking about a kid. This was 32-year-old Lou Williams.
Right. And to be honest, they gave the Warriors fits. That Lou Williams Harrell pick and roll was a problem for them, you know, and that was something that really they struggled to defend. And this is probably still the best defensive team we've had in the NBA for like the past 5 years.
Is there, with all this being said, a house of cards element, though, to the Clippers, to where it's, I think there's always that high variance risk when you're so invested in free agency as they are. But even though they're in this good position and they can run it back while fleshing out the roster a little bit, you saw career years, basically, from Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, and Danilo Gallinari. And it becomes a matter of, you know, can you count on them to deliver adequate encores to what they have? And so is there punchy playoff upstart status still hanging in the balance a little bit? Because if they don't get these stars, if free agency doesn't play out as planned, there's still something about them, to me at least, and maybe I'm wrong, that seems a little bit unknowable.
Yeah, I mean, no, you're 100% right. And there's a whole couple elements with it. One, it's counting on guys to have the year that they had again, which doesn't always work out that way, right? We've seen it with dudes in contract years and whatnot. Or Harrell going into a contract year might want a bigger role and things like that. You know, I think Patrick Riley calls it the disease of me. And I think those things tend to cause a problem, right? Once you start getting success, you want more. We saw it in Boston with those young kids who had a lot of success and then had to take a lesser role. And so it's going to be interesting how all of this navigates depending on what they do in free agency. And the other side of it too is, man, they were the darling of the NBA, right? Like, everybody loved this team. This is a scrappy, tough team. You know, what happens when you get a superstar? You know, do you lose that identity a little bit? Do you lose some of that cohesion you had in the locker room? These are all things that are unknowable. We won't know until, if they get a star, how it works in the locker room. If they get two stars, how does it play in the locker room? You know, I'm of the belief that I don't think Durant and Kawhi can play well together. You know, I think they're both dominant one-on-one guys. I know that's who they're targeting, and they want both of those guys. But I don't know if that's smart necessarily. You know, I think Kawhi and Clay pairing would be really interesting, because the way Clay plays kind of plays perfectly with Kawhi. But then you have to figure out all these other guys. How does it work with Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell and you know, Jamichael Green and whoever else you bring back? Gallinari, you know, how do you fit this all together? You know, is Gallinari going to be a guy who, again, in a contract year, looking to do more, trying to secure his next contract? Or is he a guy that he's also going to be concerned that, hey, I'm an asset now, I know I might get traded? You know, there's just so many different elements that go into it, Dan, that it gets kind of hard to figure out. But I am concerned that, for me, my biggest concern is, do they lose that? They're such a lovable bunch. Do they lose that when they get a big name guy to join them?
The Kawhi KD thing would be funny if they ended up pairing up, just so that we could recycle Durant's 2014 comments about Kawhi being a system player. Just to draw. And then he did, I can't remember the year. It might have been, he was with the Warriors, so I'll just say 2016 when this happened, but he had the chance to take it back, and he was like, nah.
So I'm good. Just,
So that's like, I couldn't see them play together just because of that. I don't know if NBA players are as petty as I am, but that'd be so. I'd be shocked if those were the two guys they ended up getting.
I would say, I don't know if you're petty enough when it comes to NBA players, because it's surprising sometimes with some of these guys where I'm like, wow, okay, we're holding on to that. All right, cool. So, yeah, that's, I don't think you're petty enough.
To the end of all everything you just said about how complicated the Clippers' future is, if they don't end up getting a star, is there that chance? It definitely wouldn't happen over the offseason, but is there that chance then at midseason, if they're not in the playoff picture, if they're not even close to as good as they thought they were going to be, where they almost go the other direction, where you start, you know, as you said, Gallo's in a contract year, Harrell's in a contract year, Williams will have another year left on his contract at a very decent price point. Do they start then looking at selling off those veteran pieces and steering into the rebuild that we thought they were going into at one point anyway? Or do you think that this team, because they're in LA, because of how much stock they've placed in free agency, that they'll probably always prioritize, or not always, but at least for now, prioritize trying to remain relevant over reacting to maybe what we would call now, this year was an unexpected pleasant surprise, whereas next year they might just navigate any potential disappointment and not do anything drastic?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of it would depend on what's going on in the market and what they're seeing. I think this is a front office and ownership group that will capitalize on opportunities, as we saw with the Zubac trade. They got the phone call about Zubac. They weren't
that was such a great story too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, they were like, you for him? Yeah. Okay, yeah, hey, you're a Laker now. Go. Leave, Mike.
In hindsight, could Magic Johnson have just been sort of throwing Jerry West a bone because he knew he was going to leave? This was like him extending an olive branch in the Lakers organization. He's like, I'm out anyway, so here you go.
I don't think so, but, you know, with the Lakers, you can't rule anything out of the realm of possibility these days. But, yeah, I mean, they're smart in that sense of being opportunistic, and if they think – hey, Gallo's in his contract year. We don't think we can re-sign him. We're not going to be at the same. We're going to want to re-sign him at a much lower number. He's not going to be interested. We saw it with what they did with Tobias Harris. It will make a move. Same with Montrezl Harrell. Same with Lou Williams. Like, if it's smart for them, I think that's something they'll look at. If it's something where they can be proactive about, you know, this is really that Tobias Harris trade shows you a lot of insight into how they think, because they're very proactive about things. So I think that's something you got to be aware of, you know, going into it. Hey, if the team is nowhere near the playoffs come trade deadline, I wouldn't be shocked if they start going like, okay, let's see what's out there for these guys, because we don't think we're going to re-sign Gallinari. Let's see what we can get for him. Like, they're not going to lose an asset for nothing.
I personally forgot about that. I was asking you the question. You bring up Tobias Harris. I feel like maybe we've just been hardened to that trade because a few months have passed and everything that's just happened. But that was something that blew, I just think, people in general away, that they decided to make that move. And so this isn't a team that's necessarily going to do anything that's expected.
Yeah, I just think you got to think with them, they're gonna do their due diligence ahead of time. It's refreshing to have a nice, smart front office in LA, kind of showing you how it's done. You know, but they're just so proactive, because nobody was expecting Tobias Harris to get traded. I didn't have any anticipation that I didn't even know they were looking to trade him.
When I got the phone call, like, it was 3 or 4 in the morning Eastern time to come into work when that happened. That was not the name that I thought was gonna ruin my night.
You were thinking AD got traded.
Right.
You know, and that was the thing. And they had pulled off this trade quietly and got it done quickly. And I mean, they got a bunch of assets out of it. They've accumulated a ton of assets, which makes them players in the trade market. You know, that Miami 2021 pick is going to be valuable, man. I don't know if they're going to be the ones to pick it. Who knows what situation Miami is going to be. But right now, it doesn't look like they're going to be that good.
That's one of those picks to track, like, the history of too. Like, how many times it can exchange hands before it actually conveys.
Yeah, I mean, this is with its third team now, so it's gonna and I won't be surprised if it gets moved again for a big piece. But, you know, again, they're just so proactive. I wouldn't be surprised if they've already scouted 2021 draft thinking like, these guys are the guys that might be available. Like, I mean, they're just so proactive with these things. You got to give them credit. So I think, I would just expect them to be smart about it. If they're out of the playoff race, I don't think they're going to be disillusioned about who they are. I would think they'd start to make moves.
This is the last of my own questions. Just gut feeling, do you think that Kawhi is going to end up with the Clippers? Or do you maybe think that it's still up in the air because if Toronto ends up making the NBA Finals or winning the championship, that might have some sway on his decision?
I think if Toronto does not win the championship, I mean, if they get to the finals, I think they have a good chance of keeping him. I think anything short of that, he's a Clipper. I know there's been talk lately of LeBron and his possibility he could be a Laker. I don't
Kawhi's
see that
smarter
happening.
Than that. Yeah, he knows.
I don't see that happening. And I don't think he wants to be a number two option or be considered with the number two option. So I think that's what makes the Clippers so interesting for him. So I think he ends up a Clipper and shoot, we might feel that way as early as Sunday.
Yeah. Do you have time for just a couple rapid fire listener
Absolutely,
questions?
Man. Whatever you got.
This one is from Matt Wong at Sir Matthias. He asks, we already talked about they should focus on the center position, but are there any just non-stars in general you think the Clippers should target in free agency who are not their own?
Well, I mean, I think one of their first phone calls should be to Brook Lopez. I mean, he adds a lot. And from what we've seen this year with the Bucks, it's going to be interesting. I imagine he's going to want to stay a Buck, and I think they're going to feel that way, but money talks. I think he's a guy I think, honestly, just stretch bigs, wing defenders, because you're definitely going to need that. They definitely need somebody that could defend a guy. We saw it. They struggled defending Durant. I mean, as great as Patrick Beverley was, his numbers weren't all that good defending KD. Mm-hmm. And they need that guy. They need to find a guy, almost a Patrick Beverley type, but taller. I don't know who that is right now. So that's kind of the way I would look at it.
Patrick Beverley type of taller. That's like kind of a dream player. I don't even know.
I mean, you know who that is. That's Kawhi. I mean, that's, or I mean something, you know, so, obviously I'm asking a lot here.
This question comes from, hopefully I don't butcher the pronunciation, but Omir, it's at Hasta Salata at HSTASALATA asks one of two questions actually. Is Shea, Landry Shamet, Jerome Robinson, and a max contender, a max superstar plus the Lou Williams, is that a contender in the Western Conference?
I'm gonna say no. I think the Western Conference is really tough. I think there's a lot of teams we gotta start looking out for. I think where it's way too early, but I think Dallas is going to be a team to keep an eye on. They're going to be interesting. I don't know if they're a contender yet, but there's a lot of competition for that. And I think thinking that Shea in year two, Shamet in year two are going to be ready for full on contender status. I don't think so. I mean, a lot of it also depends on who this max guy is. If I don't know, if I wake up tomorrow and next thing you know, LeBron's a Clipper. Okay. Yeah, that's possible because LeBron can be that good at times. But I don't know if there's anybody out there. I don't know, as good as Kawhi is, and he's been great. We're watching it in the playoffs. I don't know if he makes them a contender in the West, and same if they get AD now. So I'm not sure yet.
Omir also asks, how does a potential Kawhi Leonard addition impact the duo of Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams? That might actually be a good question, whether it kind of eats into their chemistry at all.
Well, it'll be interesting because, you know, I imagine it's if the Clippers stay with it the way they have, both of those guys are going to come off the bench. So it's almost kind of like, all right, we're going to let Kawhi rest and let these guys cook for a little bit. The thing about Kawhi, and this is what's funny, you know, KD's comments that he's a system player really is, it's the Spurs system. But the thing that kind of goes unbeknownst to most people is, Kawhi's really a one-on-one ball dominant guy. We're watching it now in Toronto and we're seeing it. But there were times with the Spurs, where he would just break off plays and go one-on-one and things like that. And he was just so good, you know, Pop's going to let him do that. And that was something in that regard. So it would be tough, I think, with all three of those guys together on the floor at the same time, because then I think it gets a little harder to kind of go like Kawhi trying to create and then kick it to those guys. But if they found a way to make that work with the three of them, that's pretty lethal, because that's a high scoring combination between the three of them.
And it's just, we saw it in Toronto for most of the year. He seemed to exist so far outside whatever else they were doing on offense. I think it's gotten a little to a lot better since Marc Gasol has come over, and maybe the ball's just moving a little bit better. But that's something I think there was always an element of that with the Spurs, but him being maybe in Toronto just because it's a new team, he seemed to just exist so far outside of their offensive system or their offensive approach at some points that you're really watching him, you're like, wow. And that's when it really started to, you know, for me this season, that's where it really hit me the most, at least.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing with Toronto. Like, you know, they had two offenses going. They had one when Kawhi was in the game, and it was all Kawhi all the time. And they're not wrong. I'm not – that's fine. I mean, that's the guy's an MVP caliber player. And then they had another one where when he was out and the ball would move side to side and guys would, you know, they'd find Siakam cutting there. You know, that was kind of when Kyle Lowry would cook. And it's all gotten better with Gasol, like you said, because he's become more of a ball mover for them, really to killing his post game, which I think is actually kind of hurting them in this series. But that's for another podcast, another time. But I think that's kind of the thing with Kawhi, is he's a lot more ball dominant. He's not a natural playmaker. He'll make the right pass. He'll get some assists. But like, come on, like how many games have we felt like how many games have we seen where Kawhi's had like 9-10 assists on a regular basis? When he does it, we're like, whoa, wow, that's amazing. But it's not something that we see consistently from him. And that kind of makes it hard a little bit to play with him.
Yeah, that'll definitely be. And you mentioned it even earlier in the pod when you were talking about what happens in the locker room if they get a star. He's not the guy that's going to rally the locker room together either. And so I would put him on my team in a heartbeat. I'm just saying there's a lot more to it. You pointed this out already, of just there's a lot more to it than just adding the star and then everything is ho-hum. There's going to be a transition period both on and off the court probably.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just the way it goes. I mean, whoever you bring in, there's always going to be an adjustment period. It's you know, and you have to figure it out. And the good thing is, too, though, is they have a guy in Doc Rivers who's great at trying to figure it out. So he had best coaching. I mean, this might have been the best year of his career. And I know saying that with all the championships he won in Boston and with those teams. But he did more with this team than I think anybody even expected.
The only knock I had against him this season was that he had to be saved from himself a little bit, where if they didn't trade Avery Bradley, I shudder to think how many minutes he would have continued logging.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, I mean, listen, man, coaches have their favorites. It's hard. I know we don't want to admit it, but it's hard sometimes, and they can be blinded by that stuff. So I understand that, and I understand your thought behind it, because it was becoming a problem.
That'll do it for us. Those are all the questions we have. A couple others that are just not suitable for this podcast or not related to the tweet that was sent out soliciting them. Mo, thank you so much for giving me an hour of your time to talk about the Clippers and their outlook. Anyone who is not following him on Twitter, do it now, right now, at Mo Dakhil _MBA. That's at MODAKHIL_MBA. You can check out his work at Blue Wire podcast. Follow them at Blue Wire Pods. He will be making appearances on Blue Wire Buckets, other podcasts, I'm sure. And we have the, what are we calling it now? The To Be Named Later podcast.
Yeah, the podcast To Be Named Later. Or we can do it for the Harry Potter fans, you know, the podcast that shall not be named.
Ooh.
That might be a good one, Dan. I might have gotten it.
That might be the one. As a Harry Potter nerd, that might be the one. If I'm not interested in basketball, I'm subscribing and rating to that podcast.
See, we loop in those people and they think it's a Harry Potter podcast, but here it is, me talking about basketball and have no clue really too much about Harry Potter. I might pull that off.
I'm with it. And if anyone needs the title for the podcast of Reckless Speculation, you will need to contact Mo for permission just to make sure that he has not used that already. And you can also check out his work. He's a freelance contributor for the Washington Post Sports. Again, I've gotten the opportunity to talk hoops with him now a few times. I thoroughly enjoy it, learn something every time. So follow him again at @MoDeKeel_NBA. Until next time, though, I leave everybody with the shout out to the legend, Kyle Anderson.